Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it's time for the Negative Positives Podcast, coming to you live out of the Gutter Man Cave in beautiful Louisville, Kentucky. And now, here are your hosts, Andre Dominguez and Mike Gutterman.
Hello and welcome to the Negative Positives Podcast, episode number 206. I'm your host, Mike Gutterman, coming to you from the Gutterman Cave in Louisville, Kentucky. It's Sunday night, and as always, we have a special guest. And being that it's Sunday, everyone's favorite co-captain has come along for the voyage, Mr. Andre Dominguez, all the way out in Los Angeles, the City of Angels. How are you tonight, Andre?
I'm very well, Mike. Thank you so much.
Perfect. And our special guest tonight, we're very excited, got Jennifer Zahner from the Obscura Darkroom that you've probably heard quite a bit about. I believe the FPP talked quite a bit about it, but we're going to dive deep into that a little bit later, kind of find out what's going on with her opening a darkroom in New Jersey. But so Jennifer Zahner, thanks for joining us. How are you doing tonight?
Pretty good. Thank you for having me on, guys.
Oh, it's absolutely our privilege and our honor. But so, Jennifer, what we'd like to kind of start off with is just kind of get people to know you a little bit before we kind of dive into the dark room and all that stuff and all the good details about that. How did you get into photography? Like, what's can you tell us a little story about how you got into all this mess?
Sure. So way back long ago, I was in high school and looking for an art class to take. It was suggested that I take photography, and I absolutely fell in love with it. I got my little used Pentax K1000 and yes, started snapping away.
Well, I'm sorry, Mike. Are you still excited about those?
I still love my Pentax. Let's not get carried away here. But
oh, that's my
sorry. Go
camera.
Ahead, Jennifer.
Favorite camera. So I did that. I became a super nerd and became the photo editor for my yearbook and my school newspaper. I even went to yearbook camp for photography, and I started, you know, just loving it, and then continued a little bit into college, and then decided I needed to study a real major and stopped really working in a dark room. I always was taking photographs, but just dropping my film off and getting them printed up, you know. Mm-hmm. So fast forward to when I was about to turn 40, I was started to take stock into, you know, what hobbies do I have, what I really want to do when I grow up. And I was living in Cincinnati, actually, at the time, and just decided to take a community, continuing adult education course at the Art Academy there, and fell in love again, and I've been going full throttle since then. This year I had some time off of work and started thinking about what I really wanted to do, and what I really wanted to do was work in a dark room and teach people how to work in a dark room, and realize that there really weren't any dark rooms here in New Jersey for me to do that. So I decided I'd be the one to open it.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And so did you ever shoot digital, or I mean, did you ever leave film, or you've always been kind of analog with your photography?
I've always been analog, except for my the cell phone, but always been analog. I'm a little bit of a technophobe, so I like stripped down bare bones equipment, and just love to utilize film as a medium to express myself, and hope to generate that sort of enthusiasm for it in others.
It's nice to hear that someone else was a fellow your book staffer, and that's kind of where I got my start into some serious photography. It's the only time in my life I've ever done any darkroom work, which was very limited, which is why I got kicked out of the darkroom, got kicked off the photography staff. But but at least you did your job, and unlike me, who did not do his job and was a slacker basically. So
Did you ever have like people under your supervision, like Mike, that you needed to kind of whip into shape?
There were a couple people that I would assign different shoots and stuff, but everyone behaved. So
I used to
bunch of nerds. So
well, I was a nerd, but I think I was trying not to be. I was trying to be the cool guy, you know. I was trying to be the real bad guy, you know.
Well, once I went to yearbook camp, I realized that any shot I had at being cool had flown out the window.
maybe that's why I rebelled against it. I was a real bad boy, you know. And, yeah. There was this one of our enlargers in the dark room when you would do the open and close the bellows on it, like mess around with the knob or whatever that turns those, it would make this crunching noise. So I would always just do that constantly and make it sound like a monster eating somebody, and I'd be like, and drive the other two staffers really crazy. It's no wonder I got kicked out. But
yeah, dark rooms are usually close quarters. So
I mostly just hid out from the teachers and stuff. So but it's good to see that. You see, maybe if I had been a little more productive in the dark room and not got kicked off the yearbook staff, maybe I wouldn't be working in a factory today. Maybe I'd have my own dark room. But I guess I'm glad somebody made it through the voyage a little smoother sailing than I did. So all right. So we're going to dive deeper into this dark room she's opened up. And in the next segment, we have some questions from the Facebook group for Jennifer. But this is the first segment, what we always like to do is just talk about our weeks and what we've been up to this week. So we usually start with Andre. So Andre, how about you tell us about your week?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. This week has actually been pretty, pretty cool. It started off with us receiving a shipment of the powder DF96 model bath, which, you know, even though I knew theoretically it would work, you know, just as fine as the liquid one, we have already a bunch of bottles of the liquid DF96 mono bath at the studio. I kind of wanted to just, you know, mix up a batch myself and try it out, you know, see how difficult or easy it was to dissolve and mix and all that stuff. So I've been knocking away at the backlog I have a little bit this week with the powder monobath, and we're probably going to be doing an Instagram live video sometime this week, just to, you know, it's another opportunity for, you know, people to remind themselves or familiarize themselves for the first time with it, especially the folks overseas that, due to the shipping weight previously, looked at the liquid monobath and it's like, oh, that's cool, but like, it's not feasible for me. So that should be pretty fun. Later in the week, I started doing this thing where instead of getting off at the Hollywood and Vine metro station, which is, you know, just a couple of blocks away from the office, I started getting off maybe two or three stops further away on Hollywood Boulevard, and then taking, you know, essentially just walking back the opposite way to work, because a lot of the times during my lunch break, I don't have a bunch of time to actually shoot. You know, either I have film to develop or, you know, we're having a working meeting and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So traditionally, kind of Monday through Friday, I haven't had that much time to actually get some photography done, especially because in the frigid winter of Southern California, the sun's been setting pretty, pretty early. So by the time that I finish my shift, I've already lost all my light. And by the time that I'm going to work in the morning, there's barely any light anyway. Mm-hmm. So what I've been trying to do is, you know, get off on the metro a few stops further away than I need to be, and then take that walk back. Because in that walk back, that gives me enough time for the sun to rise, and a good maybe mile and a half to walk on Hollywood Boulevard when there's very few people, which is already this entirely kind of different scene and scenario, this usually bustling street that's like practically empty in the morning. So that's been a lot of fun, and I've been shooting that on the Rolleiflex, re-familiarizing myself with that camera, really getting to know it, switching out the prism finder and the waist level finder. Yeah, having a lot of fun. Friday night, I went to the new house of my beloved coworkers that they just moved in, three of them, into a new house up in North Hollywood. So now the entire CineStill team lives in North Hollywood, which is cool because we're not separated with half in North Hollywood, half in Hollywood, which aren't like close to each other despite the name. It's like across a valley. So now it's cool. Like we're all in the same neighborhood within more or less walking distance or biking distance. So on Friday night, we had a little housewarming get together at their place in which we set up a Super 8 projector and projected some home movies of the Brothers Wright themselves, which was, you know, pretty cool and cute and, you know, adorable, as you can expect to young twin brothers to look like.
wow. I guess it's kind of cool always to see Super 8 footage anyhow, right? So yeah.
So, and like I it had been a long time since I'd actually seen the Super 8 negatives, but the negatives are so tiny.
Yeah.
Kind of
yeah.
amazing, like how big. Obviously it's not super high res, but it's kind of amazing how big you can actually project it.
Wow. That's cool. And so, and just the sound of the projector too, it had to be kind of nice.
Sound, the smell, that kind of burning dust a little bit. It's just magical. I have my my slide projector here, and the kind of the biggest thing that I'd done on slide film so far was the sort of going away slash like end of the summer barbecue that we had at Matt's house at the end of my internship. That I shot on like maybe five or six rolls of I think it might have been some of the FPP Retrochrome, if I remember correctly. Because I don't think, Ektachrome hadn't come out yet. It was that and some Provia as well. And so, you know, developed that, mounted all the slides and you know, sequenced them together and projected it on the wall of my dorm room, videotaped that with my phone, and then sent it to the CineStill WhatsApp group that we have. And so that was a lot of fun. But what I really want to do maybe next weekend is actually bring the projector and project it on their wall so that they can actually see it in person.
Yeah, the way it's meant to be seen.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Awesome. Anything else, Andre?
Saturday, as has kind of become my usual thing, I went over to West Hollywood and Beverly Hills to do some vintage watch shopping, not to actually buy anything just yet, but just to see, the same way that I used to, you know, go to camera stores back in North Carolina and not always buy anything, but just have great conversations about the things we love. And having a film camera around my neck, actually started having some great conversations about film, you know, meeting some fellow film shooters, even a gentleman that I met at the Red Bar event, the Beers and Cameras for Watches thing about 2-3 weeks ago, who's actually working on a project right now of taking pictures of his watches on film with a Pentax 6-7, and he's like, trying to get some like extension tubes for some 6x7 black and white macro photography of his watches. And I was like, we're going to be friends. He actually lives like a couple blocks away from the CineStill office. So I've already invited him this week to come over and check out the studio and, you know, take a look at the dark room. Gave him a roll of film, which, you know, just great to sort of meet more people that share both of these hobbies. And it's really, really making me want to buy a macro lens for my Nikon. And, you know, I'm not sure whether or not it would make anybody happy other than me. But start taking more of my watch pictures with film. I think that'd be nice. Well,
if you're going to take watch pictures, I think they would be a little more accepted in our group. And if you did do it on film, but you could just get extension tubes, right? And just kind of do a normal 50mm lens on there and kind of get macro that way.
I could, yeah. Mm-hmm. I need to check out, you know, how that would work. I also think that, you know, something wide angle would probably work better. I wonder if anybody out there, you know, knows what the lens that I have for my Nikon that's a wide angle is a 28 millimeter 2.8, and it already focuses pretty close. But let me know if an extension 2 would work well on that, or if you have one for sale.
I've also heard, I know with like 50 millimeters, I think is what a lot of people do extension tubes with, but I think also you can just get a reversing, like adapter to mount the lens backwards and get macro that way as well. So that might be another thing to look into, but I've never tried that either. So maybe if we can get some suggestions on that too, it might be another avenue you can go down, Audrey, where you just, I guess it's like a mount that mounts to your body and then you screw the filter thread into backwards basically. And like a reversing ring, I think is what it's called. So I think you can get pretty close that way too, but
sweet.
Yeah.
I'd love to explore that a bit.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Is that it, Audrey?
Yeah, that's about it. I don't want to kind of go on too long because I have some stuff that I want to save for the solo show this week.
Okay, perfect. And then let's see, Jennifer, what have you been up to? What have you been up to this week? Anything cool to tell the people about?
Yeah, well, this, on Monday, I went to go see the Frida Kahlo exhibit at the Brooklyn Art Museum, which was fabulous. There were a lot of photographs of her and her husband and just what was going on, her and other artists and political figures in Mexico. So that was a lot of fun. And then I decided to, when I got back into the dark room, to start going through the workshops that I was starting to offer to make sure that everything was running right. So I did some solarization, I did cyanotypes, and today actually I started color printing for the first time. I know.
I really should have had her go last because this is already blowing away my week. So it's going to be hard to follow.
Way to do it. it's a trip doing it. You know, I was just like with developing color film, I was really, really, really hesitant to start doing it. But as soon as I did it, I kind of became addicted. Not that anything I printed really came out swell the first time around, but I think I contaminated my developer with Blix, as you do in the dark. but you know, I'm gonna try it again, and it's amazing. The only thing though I miss is watching, because it's all in the dark, so you can't watch the image come up in the developer. So it's kind of like this whole big mystery from once you expose the paper to when you can turn the lights on after the Blix step. So it's 5 minutes of like sheer terror and excitement and mystery.
Wow. So yeah. You mentioned a little catchword in there that I've always been interested in. You said solarization. Was you doing like solarization of the film in the tank, or is that what I'm thinking?
I'm doing it with the print.
Oh, with a print, okay.
Yeah, there's a developer called Solarol, which is formulated specifically to assist with the solarization. You can do it with regular developer. I've tried it, but it's more hit or miss. Mm-hmm. It's more repeatable with the Solarol. So that's one of the things that I really enjoyed doing in Cincinnati when I took up photography, film photography again. I had a dark room in my apartment there, but I also had access to a gang dark room through the school. So that's where I did all my experimentation, because my little dark room is like a little guest bathroom, you know, and I didn't have room for a lot of stuff going on. But yeah, it's really cool. You know, it's experimenting, which I like doing. I like just with shooting film, the experimenting with really crappy cameras.
Oh yeah, I love it. Yeah.
There's just so many things that can happen and so many decisions that you can make, to get you to the final outcome, from what film you put in to what camera, all the way to how you decide to print, if printing is your end goal. So yeah, I spent a lot of time, go figure, in the dark room, just having fun.
Oh wow!
I get fun for a job, so that's pretty cool.
That's living the dream right there. Yeah. One of our listeners, it was quite a while ago on the Facebook group, did some solarization of the actual film, I guess, by opening the tank. And that's something that I don't have a darkroom going here yet, but that's something I've been wanting to try. Maybe on a roll of film that I'm like, oh, these shots are all going to be crap. I might as well do something weird with them. But yeah, I think there's a way to do that. I need to look into that. And at some point during the developing process, I guess, you open the tank and expose some light in there and then close the tank back up, I guess. I don't know. I'm totally guessing here.
I would assume during the development stage. I know that you can also shoot directly into the sun and something like it'll start to flip. Mm. Lights and darks, but I, you know, that is interesting to me to be able to do that too. But I'm a little hesitant to do it with film, just because when you're printing, you know, if as long as you have the negative intact, you could do whatever you want.
Yeah, you get another go at it.
Yeah, you're kind of really committing if you're doing it to the film.
Right, makes sense. All right. Is that pretty much your week, Jennifer?
Yeah.
I mean, as if that's not enough. Yeah.
I also climbed Mount Everest and no. No, that was it.
Well, I think I'm just going to go ahead and skip my week. We're going to take a break now.
Nope.
I want to know.
All right. Well, I'll start off, I guess it was Monday evening. I was heading towards the, what I call the gutter band cave to go play some music. And I took, I have a couple of cameras I'm selling to help pay for this, this Leica lens that I just had to buy, you know, because I was forced to buy, you know. And did you just call me a snob again, Andre?
No, I have a little itch in my throat. It's
is that cough coming back? Yeah. Well, and so there's a, I have like two cameras that I'm planning on selling that have film in them. So I took one of those cameras with me, and on the way to the space, to the band practice space, I went, stopped at some places downtown, did some night photography on some CineStill 800T. You'll be happy to hear, Andre. So almost finished my first roll of that. So and
is
it was kind of nice.
Is that the roll that I gave you a long time ago?
Probably, yeah. It's been in that camera. Actually, I loaded that. It's how long this has been in the camera. I loaded that when I was in Findlay, Ohio at the FPP walking workshop. That's how long ago that camera been loaded. So,
and hey, folks, don't do that. The process that we use to remove the remjet makes CineStill a little bit more sensitive than other films to, you know, age and heat. We generally recommend that you shoot it soon after you buy it, or you know, cold store it if you need to. So yeah, thanks, Mike.
Well, you know, I think it's up to me. It's up to me to provide a torture chamber test to all of my films. So I'm pretty sure I've probably done that. But
I'm excited to see the images.
Yeah, I am too. Well, I wouldn't get too excited if I've already screwed it up from the get go. But
you haven't. I'm giving you a hard time.
But a nice thing was, it was a rainy night because I feel like it's not stopped raining in this town for, we actually had a point, I think it was last week, we had 37 hours of straight nonstop rain. It broke a record here. So yeah. And, it was during some of that rain. And of course, the streets were all glistening and wet. And so I've always kind of wanted to do a little bit of downtown shots within that kind of environment. So got a couple, you know, and I got maybe a couple more shots on that road to finish that up, and I can sell that camera. But as I said, I got my Leica lens in for my Leica R8. And so I got that all ready to go. Camera does function absolutely perfectly. So again, that was an unbelievable thing that someone, a very special, a secret, a secret person gave to me, and I can't thank them enough. And so that thing is ready to shoot as soon as I got to kind of finish these last couple of rows in these cameras I want to sell first, and then I'm going to load that Leica up. But yeah, I got the lens. Bought me a little UV protector filter because I'm not going to scratch that lens up. And then you know, a couple little other things on Amazon through a gift card that I had, and I even bought some. Which I did not need to buy any more film, but I needed to finish this gift card up. I had like $35 or something that I had spent on a $50 card. So I had like $15 more to spend, and I could not find anything on Amazon that I really wanted, which is, that seems crazy when they have like everything. But so I ended up just throwing like two rows of the Rolly infrared film in the cart. So I haven't shot that film yet. Yeah, so I figured, you know, that's probably not something I would go out and buy or make a point to buy, but I've got this gift card and throw a couple rows of that in there, and it spent the rest of that $50 card. And so got two rows of that, so I'm going to wait for it to get nice and sunny and hot and infrared-ish before I try it. But definitely want to give infrared film a shot. I've done a lot of infrared digital back in the day, but not film, so be fun to do that. And then see what else happened. I got... I think it was Friday. I got two packages in the mail from some listeners, some film love gifts. So yes, more gifts were given to me. And I'm not going to go into it because they left these nice notes and all that stuff. So I think I'm going to wait till my next solo show to talk about these film love gifts I got in the mail. But I can thank big thanks to Yvonne Raven and Adrian Doyle, who sent me these really awesome packages Friday. That is super exciting, and just some unbelievable stuff that they sent to the Gutterman Estate. And I'll wait till my next solo show to kind of talk about that, because I'm gonna leave as much time on this episode to talk with Jennifer here. So, I guess the last thing about my week is last night I went and saw one of my favorite bands, a band called Russian Circles, which is kind of one of the bands that influenced my band Sea Hero years ago. And so we got to go see them live in Louisville in this really small club. It's the first time I'd been to this particular venue. And I did bring like my little compact Pentax UC1, autofocus kind of Olympus stylus epic type of camera, you know, clamshell type design. It's a really fun camera, easy to put in a pocket. And I took a couple of shots of just friends and stuff hanging. A bunch of my friends were there at the show. So just some friend shots, just 1990s 400 speed color film, blow them out with flash kind of shots, you know. So took a little bit more photography last night. So yeah, I'm kind of getting back on shooting photos game again. So it's kind of nice to actually have something to talk about when we talk about our weeks now. So even though it's not as much as what Jennifer did, I'm kind of slowly getting back on the horse. So
I'm jealous that you guys are shooting. That's one thing that I have not been doing a lot of. I've been otherwise occupied. So I haven't really had opportunity or made opportunities to do that. But I am going tomorrow. Nice. So there's a Film Shooters Collective photo walk going on in Manhattan. So
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
How close are you to like Manhattan and all that? Like,
I take the train, and the trains are cooperating. It'll probably be like 40 minutes.
That's not bad.
Into Penn Station from me. Okay. If I drive, maybe it should take only about like 45 minutes to drive in, but you know, it could take what it takes to drive in. But I'm really close, and actually people from Manhattan have either come in to the dark room to use it or have made arrangements to this coming week. So I'm close enough and I'm accessible enough from public transportation that city folk can come into the burbs.
That's good. You can kind of, can get a tap into that market a little bit. That's good. That's good. All right. Well, I think that pretty much is our weeks. And so I guess we'll take a break here and we'll come back and we'll address some of the questions on the Facebook group to Jennifer. about the Obscura Darkroom or whatever else those comedians wanted to ask. Usually they have, I haven't looked at them yet, but
these are all legit questions.
So. Oh, really? Really? All legit this time.
No one's screwing with me.
I think they realize that we're just skipping over a lot of the comedy ones now, but we'll find out more about the Obscura Darkroom here in the next segment. So we'll take a break and we'll be right back, folks. All right, folks, we're back from the break, and with this segment, we have a guest on. We like to ask the loyal members of the Facebook group, the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group, which is approaching 3,000 members. Unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah, and so I've let a ton of new members in this weekend. It seems like it's really picking up. So
congratulations.
That's super great. Awesome. So, but we always, when we're gonna have a guest, we pose a kind of a thread on there to the members. Hey, do you have any questions you'd like to ask our guests? And the Facebook on this particular occasion, I meant to put this thread up like yesterday, and forgot to. So like 2 hours before we did this recording, I put the thread up thinking, oh man, this is short notice. I don't know if we'll get any questions for Jennifer. And but the Facebook group came through with flying colors. I'm happy to see. It's a very active group, and that kind of proves it. With 2 hours before we hit record, we get quite a few questions for Jennifer. So we're going to go ahead and dive into that and find out what the Facebook group members want to ask Jennifer. So Andre, what's our first question from the Facebook group?
First question comes from Mr. Jason Konopinski, asking, beyond making equipment and space available to the community, what is the big vision behind the project?
I would say just supporting analog photography in New Jersey and making it more accessible. I'm eventually going to be working with the community in the form of working with the Girl Scouts in Newark to make it accessible for people in the area, and especially children. I have some courses lined up for the summer that I just posted on Saturday, yesterday, for some summer courses for children, well, for teens. I think that it's really important to get them young. And I, unfortunately, schools are removing their dark rooms at an alarming rate, and also looking at homeschoolers to make sure that they have access to dark rooms, which isn't really feasible when you're homeschooling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, well, that's awesome. Yeah, I was
a Boy Scout, and we never had anything similar like that. But when I was in North Carolina working at a camera store, the local both Boy Scout and Girl Scout troops regularly came to the store for their photography merit badges, and I was like, that is so cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's cool too that you're trying to get young people in, because I think we've talked about this on the podcast, but I think a lot of the rejuvenation of this film renaissance or revival or whatever we're calling it came from it's come from as much as I hate to say it, those damn millennials. But
you are very welcome, Mike. It's okay. You can thank me personally. It's fine.
But get off my lawn. And I think a little bit of reason of that is, a lot of millennials or people of that age group, they do, they can remember film at least somewhere in their lives. Maybe when they were a kid, their parents shot film. It's not a completely foreign concept to them. And I think a little bit of that, that sort of the retro part of it is why they were attracted to it, and just having some sort of memory of it. But kids coming up now, really young kids, could possibly only been exposed to digital photography their entire life. So you've got to have some way to introduce this next generation coming up, because they're not going to maybe have that sort of romantic sort of attachment to what film was maybe when they were really, really young or something. So I think getting the next generation interested is a big step into keeping this thing going forward.
Yeah, and I think it's also just such a unique and powerful way to communicate and to express yourself. It's this magical wizardry blend of science and art and craft that is rolled all up into one, and you can really make powerful statements with small tools.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love it when, you know, folks in the community really do kind of dedicate time to instruct and inspire young kids. Like, we have obviously the FPP gang doing their, you know, camera donation program to the schools. Rachel over in Sunny 16 Land with her you know, workshops with young kids, as well as now her Analog Adventure Kit. Like, just so many awesome things happening where, you know, analog photography is being introduced to young people, which, like, you know, with even, like, young kids having smartphones these days, like, this is new to them. Like, this is, like, oh, this is... I almost I wonder sometimes if they think, like, oh, is this, like, new photography? Like, new technology?
Right. Yeah, it's very possible they might think that, because, like I said, they may not have ever seen film or film cameras in, you know, really in use. Yeah, so yeah, it's good stuff. But all right, that's a great question. Anything else on that one, guys?
I don't think so.
Cool.
I'm sorry. Not for me. No. I think when I was looking for locations, I really wanted to make sure that there was a strong community, arts community. And I found that in Newark, New Jersey, believe it or not. They have warmly welcomed me to the community. So I really appreciate that.
Good amount of film photography in that area, or that you've kind of picked up on? Yeah.
Yeah. When I had my opening night party, several people from the area, I get really excited when, like, people I don't know already like come to things or show interest. And they're just people who heard general buzz about this and are artists or photographers or involved in the arts community somehow, and stop by looking to welcome me and see if we could collaborate. And it's been fantastic.
A lot of different age groups, or are they all mostly just old
buddies
like me?
Some
like...
young, no, there are some young whippersnappers, you know, the younger said, I'm 40, I'm going to be 46 this year. So I'm younger ones, they're 29. Wow. And, you know, old farts like me. And then, like, people who were a little bit older, who only knew film, you know, and were already past their formative years once digital came around. So there's a wide range of age groups that can be targeted for this, which is great.
Perfect. All right, Andre, what's our next question from the Facebook group?
The next question comes from Theo Panagopoulos and is supported by M. He said here, this would be my question too. Please say hi to Jen for me. Theo asks, setting up from scratch, what was the hardest thing to source to get you operational?
Oh, I liked this question because it's crazy. Insurance.
Interesting. Yeah, I would not have thought that.
No, and it was so hard getting insurance just because people didn't know what I was talking about in the sense that they didn't have, like, a template for it already. So we had to kind of build something from scratch. So we were going back and forth with, you know, what I'd be doing and what's going on and who's going to be in there and what kind of chemicals and this and that, just because they had sort of a format for a photo studio and they had a format for like art classes, like an art school. But again, because of the chemistry involved and all of that, who knew that photochemistry was so dangerous?
yeah.
I bet it was very interesting to tell the insurance folks, yeah, I'm planning on having, you know, up to, you know, all the way down to young children around these large, heavy metal enlargers and dangerous chemicals.
Yeah, it's funny though, the one company that wanted to work with me, I got blown off by a couple that were like, yeah, we don't know what you're talking about, whatever. She was really super into it because the agent I was talking to used to do photography in high school. So she was like, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Let me try to help you. And she was figuring it out. So that was cool. But that, as far as opening the business, that was sort of the challenge. As far as equipment, the sinks.
Oh yeah.
Were fun just because they're so big, and the delivery was sort of interesting. But I actually was able to get a sink for free. A friend salvaged one for me from a coffee place that was renovating. So my film processing sink is a nice sink, which was for free.
that's always the best price. Yeah.
Yeah. But the other sinks were, it was just tough kind of finding to enough places to compare, because there's not many people in the darkroom sink game.
Yeah.
But those would be my two answers, I think, the insurance and the sinks.
Did you mostly get a hold of like used gear, or were the things you just had to buy new?
The sinks and the furniture, like the cabinetry and stuff, was all new. The enlargers were all used. I was fortunate to get donation or close to donation prices for a lot of this stuff. A lot of people were really excited when I told them that I was going to use it for a public dark room. They're like, yes, you know, it's going to be used. It's not going to sit in like the attic anymore, or like wind up in the landfill, and it's going to be loved.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, so most people were really excited to give me their stuff, and I'm still accepting whatever people have to get it off their hands, because I'm a born thrifty person. So
well, you heard it, folks. If you're in the New York, New Jersey area, or within driving distance to. I don't think we've even mentioned the name of the darkroom. What is it?
I think I might have mentioned it. Yeah, I don't know. Obscura, right?
Yep, Obscura darkroom in Newark, New Jersey. Yes. Yeah, you can get in contact with me. Just email me. It's jen@obscuradarkroom.com. That's J-E-N, one N. And, you know, we'll make arrangements for pickup or drop-off.
Perfect.
Awesome. And we'll also get
if I can't use it, I'm in touch with there's like this underground connection of dark rooms throughout the country, and we've started to communicate with each other. So if I can't use it, I'm sure that others will be able to use it.
Oh, that's awesome. Awesome. A little underground.
I know. Like
this. Oh, you're speaking Mike's language.
a little spy network of dark rooms. But and we'll get we'll obviously get Jennifer to repeat all this information, her contact information at the end of the show. So get your pen and pencils ready for that. So you can help her out if you have anything you want to give away. So all right. Is that pretty much it, or we want to move on to the next one?
Sure, let's move on.
All right.
All right.
our good friend and last week's guest host, all the way from Thailand, Mr. Matt Jones, asks, is there some form of induction people need to go through before working in the darkroom? I wonder how you cope with people possibly polluting chemicals and inadvertently causing chaos.
That's a good one. Yeah. I wonder that myself. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, you have to go through the hazing. I'd give a darkroom tour basically to anyone coming in. If anyone has used the darkroom before, kind of showing them where things are, and I'm able to gauge what's going on. I've had a couple people working at the same time, and they sort of worked out between them, you know, themselves about just kind of workflow and how to work in the space together. I think that the hardest thing is figuring out who's going to be in control of the Bluetooth speaker. I offer a class, like either individual or group, depending on what someone prefers, for reacquainting themselves with the dark room, which I really suggest doing.
Especially for someone like me who got kicked out of the dark room, that would probably where I would start.
Definitely. You would definitely need that. But even if it's been like, you know, if it's been over a year, I would say it would be worth it, just because it's not that the technology has changed, but you're working in a darkened room. You kind of need to know where things are and have a feel for what you're doing, because you can't rely on sight so much.
Let's see, 1989 to 2019. Yeah, I'm probably a little overdue for that class. So yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right. Next question, Andre, or have we covered that one?
I think we have covered that one.
Cool.
Federico Quaglino asks, good morning. I wanted to know, what film do you most enjoy printing in the darkroom and why? Hi from rainy Hong Kong.
Hi. It's rainy New Jersey right now. Yeah, I love this question too, because I love T-Max 400. I am a film loyalist. I don't really shoot a lot of other films. It's predictable. I've shot it so much. I know what I'm going to get for the most part. And therefore I know what I'm doing when I'm printing it. It's not that others are bad, but it's just my preference. Like, it's predictable. I know what I'm getting. Mm. I don't have to meter, because like, I'm so lo-fi that like, I won't even put a battery in my camera, in my Bronica.
Oh, wow.
You know, I just, cause it's just a never ending battle to keep a charged battery in there. So, you know, it's just Sunny 16 and off we go. So I know how it works. And then I like shooting now with getting into color, Ektar 100.
Oh, it's a nice one.
120. Oh, and this is all 120. I'm as I get older, you know, and I need bifocals and stuff, I need bigger film. And it's just really difficult for me now to cut between the frames of 35mm, and it's so teeny tiny now.
Yeah.
So I prefer working with 120.
Yeah, I had to go to bifocals, I guess. It was like a year or so ago, but I probably should have went to them about 3 years ago. But man, I avoided it for so long. I just felt like that was the final nail in the coffin of my youth. So I just...
I know.
But I did get the no lines, just so people wouldn't... it wouldn't be so obvious.
Yeah. It's not as obvious, but it is once I hold something at arm's length and tilt my head back.
Right. My wife used to always tell me, you know what? You look older looking through the top of your glasses than you would with just bifocals. So, because I would always have to like put my glasses way down at my nose and look above them to kind of read something close. So
yeah.
So that wasn't necessarily the most youthful look I was going for there. But it's interesting you said T-Max 400. I've shot a lot of T-Max back in the day. I haven't shot any recently. I need to kind of get back on that. I've got plenty of it, but I used to shoot that a lot. But I found with T-Max, it seems like a lot of people, it's like kind of a love or hate film with them. A lot of people act like it's a little difficult compared to like Tri-X, a little less forgiving. But I always really enjoyed it, and I always had good results with it. But it seems like it's kind of a people seem to either love or hate kind of film. But yeah. So it's interesting. That's your
Is it more difficult to kind of like focus it with the grain focuser with that tabular grain structure?
Not really. I don't find it to be an issue at all. I guess I'm one of the lucky people that have no problems with it. Whatever my little film voodoo thing that I do, it works well. And that's another reason why I love film. It's just, you know, you find your stuff and person to person, like, it might not work out the same mm-hmm. way, even though you're following the same steps and using the same stuff. It's just, you know, your own little twist on it. You know, I usually do stand development or semi-stand mm-hmm. with it, with Rodinal, but I have been using Sprint film developer. Go. So, because at the dark room, it's all Sprint.
Oh, wow. Good. Have you dealt with them? Because I had just the most awesome interaction with them. I placed an order online, and then I had to, something got messed up with the shipping price. So they told me to call them, and I called them, and like the owner answered the phone, and I talked to her for like a half hour, and she was like awesome. So have you had any conversations with her or any dealings? Cause she was amazing.
They are amazing. Right. Yeah. I had a customer come in and wanted to develop a 4x5 film that wasn't on the massive development chart and wasn't in their specifications. So I was like, all right, let me message them on Facebook. And they like responded, and I was like, oh my God, responded. And you know, they are supportive on social media for me. During my Kickstarter, because I really didn't have anything to post as far as darkroom news in the beginning. So I started posting things that I liked in photography, and Sprint was one of the companies that I called out for being amazing. It's great chemistry. You know, I came across it when I was taking the photo class in Cincinnati. I started using it at home. I sometimes dabble with other film developers, but as far as the other stuff, it's always been Sprint. So,
and the way I understand it too, now this is coming from somebody that hasn't been in a darkroom since 1989, and I believe we used Kodak chemicals back then. But now the way the Sprint chemicals work, like in the trays, the way I understand it is when the indicator stop bath goes bad, you know everything else is bad too. Like it kind of tells you when to refresh everything, right?
Yeah, everything's 1 to 9 except for the film fixer, it's like no fail.
Oh, perfect.
It's all designed to kind of work together. So as long as you're not doing something funky, you know, where you're messing around with sort of the template of how it is designed to work together, it's great. It'll turn, and it's vanilla scented stop, so it's not.
There you go.
It takes the edge off. So it's kind of like vanilla vinegar, but it's not as bad, and the fixer doesn't stink. So,
wow. So, Andre, you used Sprint at North Carolina, right? When you were in the darkroom there, is that right?
I did. Yeah, like Jen, my darkroom class that I took in college used exclusively Sprint chemicals. At Southeastern Camera in Carver, we did carry other stuff. But the Sprint stuff you can order both in like the small bottles as well as in these, you know, it's actually pretty interesting. And you probably order in these sizes, Jen, but they're kind of these like bottles that come like kind of surrounded in this like cardboard box with a little spout, almost kind of like imagine
sort of boxed wine, for lack of a better comparison.
It's exactly like boxed wine, and then you get a little spigot.
Exactly.
It's so simple.
Wow.
Yeah, so cool. I loved it. I don't think they carry it at Freestyle. At least I didn't see it. So I know that for me personally, for my printing needs, as soon as I'm done with this round of Ilford chemistry that I have, I'm going to be placing an order with Sprint. And Mr. Gutterman, we need to get her on the show soon.
Yes, we do. I know. I can throw Jennifer's name out there and throw it, maybe give us a little more weight.
Name drop, goodness. Name drop a celeb in the community dark room space.
Yeah, we are not above name dropping on this podcast, that's for sure. So
I don't know how much good that will do for you, but
it's not going to hurt us compared to throwing our names out there. So, but, all right, perfect. What's the next question, Andre?
We have from Bill Smith a couple. How has the reception been from the New York, New Jersey analog photography community been? And do you find strong interest in workshops with the local community? I guess those are kind of similar, but.
And in the community at large, like the New York, New Jersey, some Pennsylvania, people have been very supportive from the get-go. Before I 100% decided on doing this, I sort of put some feelers out about with different groups and different people that I knew in the film community. And it was really positive. I get messages about with questions and showing interest in it. The local, like my neighborhood, that's going to be more outreach on my part. I don't think that they're going to necessarily come to me. I don't have like a storefront. It's like a warehouse, and I have a big sign in the window and my name on the door, but I share it with like craftspeople. So it's not obvious that, and it's not a block that people are like walking down like, oh, go to the bakery and go to the bank and go to the dark room, you know? It's like, oh, I'll go to the dollar store and I'm across from a juvenile hall, which is good because it's total, like the cops are there all the time.
Oh, there you go.
And there's security cameras pointing on the street. So it's cool.
Or maybe you can reach out to them and get like, I don't know, troubled kids and get them off out of trouble. Yeah.
through photography. That would be cool. But right now it's about getting the word out and getting people to commit to coming in, because everyone's hibernating right now because it's having a real winter. Right. Now it's starting.
Real winter? Is that a jab at my...
I'm like poor Andre, who had to close his bedroom window. Silly.
And I'm here recording on my bed with a fuzzy blanket on my lap. Just the worst.
I'm in like a turtleneck. No, it's... what was I saying? It's about getting people in and getting people aware.
What's some of the ways you've kind of thought about like getting the word out? And that's gotta be like probably the biggest hurdle, right? Like trying to find different avenues to get their name out and get it in the hands of the right people to see it. And like,
It's been a transition from during Kickstarter phase where it was just, it was like an onslaught of like, hey, I'm here. Oh my God, look at me, from everywhere. And then now I'm really trying to focus on potential customers. So while I love people who are from other places, it's who are my potential customers. So I'm, you know, doing things like putting flyers up and at coffee places and other places that people potentially would be that are potential customers could go to, posting on the Newark Arts page. They have an event site, so I've been posting my classes there, and people have been responding from that. It's always interesting to me to hear where people found me from.
Yeah.
To know what works. You know, I'm doing Yelp, I'm doing Facebook, Instagram, and I actually tweet or twit or whatever it is. I mean, I'm not as active as some, but you know, I know that social media is really important right now. And I just, as a customer myself, like, it's so much easier to be like, let me just message on Facebook and see if someone pops into an answer. I've been able to establish relationships with companies like Sprint, with companies like Besseler, which is an, you guys aren't darkroom geeks. So Besseler is.
I know Besseler.
I know Besseler.
I had a Besseler and Larger.
Oh, okay.
In fact, I think it was a Besseler and Larger that made that monster crunching noise at my high school. Yes.
Probably was. And they're fantastic too. I'm totally a Besseler fangirl when it comes to enlargers. It's just what I learned on and what I'm comfortable on, and they're just built like tanks and perfect for many different hands using them. So just a whole bunch of different companies that you can reach out to in different ways through your phone. I mean, it's like so simple, and it's there, and people respond, and it's great. So social media has been very important for me.
Yeah. So, I don't know if I'm kind of stealing the thunder on a future question here, but like, is there like some of the workshops and classes you're wanting? Do you want to kind of go through a little bit what you've been thinking on that? Like about offering?
Yeah. And that's actually Sherry Christensen's question. What kind of workshops? Wanted to, you know, to give her credit for the question and also give her a shout out.
The workshops and so I have these things called crash courses, which are like 2-hour just crash course on doing film, or a crash course on printing a print. So in the film one, it's I give you your roll of film, we look at your camera, you open it up, I show you how to load the film, from that to how to use the camera, manual camera, then walk around the block and burn some film, come back, we'll develop it, and, you know, so there's the film part, and then there's the printing part. Again, it's 2 hours. I supply paper, you supply the negative, you come out with an 8x10 print. And it, you know, at least one 8x10 print. You know, whether you stay after that, that's fine, but I'll set you up and get your printing with the basics. And then there are things that are like more like workshops, like special topics. So I'm doing the solarization and the cyanotypes right now. Those are sort of the four that I'm offering. And I just, yesterday, I just put in all the dates for March and I'm trying to do some on weekends, some on weeknights, so that people, and they're offered multiple times during the month so that people can find a day that works for them.
Awesome.
I'm working on like a weekly class, like a more intensive photography/darkroom class. It would be 7 weeks that would end with a gallery show. I have a gallery space in the darkroom as well. So that's part of what I'd like to do, to have members and people who use it represented in the gallery.
That's perfect. That's exactly what I was just getting ready to ask, because I was listening to the episode, the latest, I think, Uncle Jonesy's Cameras podcast, where they went to a dark room that's opened up in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Do you remember the name of that dark room, Andre? I think you, did you listen to that episode?
It is the Safe Light District, which is an awesome name.
Yeah. And one of the things that they were going to do was try to have gallery showings and kind of give people a reason to kind of come in there off the street, and then maybe they get interested, you know, in what all is going on there. So I think that's a great idea if you're pursuing that avenue as well. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And they're opening soon as well, right, Mike? I think it's the 22nd?
I think so, yeah. I almost felt like they were kind of...
Kelly, if we're wrong about that, correct us.
Yeah. And so how long have you been open at this point, Jennifer?
We opened January 11th. And
happy belated one month anniversary.
Oh, I know. 1 month. I made it. that was a check mark. 1 month.
There you go.
Yeah, it's been good. I offer memberships, so I already have, you know, there were people who were members through the Kickstarter, and then I'm also looking to get more of them and also have them included in gallery shows and different topics, potentially even having them facilitate one of the workshops, because everyone has their little niche and specialty that they like to do, and I want to take advantage of that and just for myself as well learn from others, because, you know, we all have a lot to learn about different topics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I noticed, wasn't it a bunch of the FPP gang came to your actual opening, right?
Yeah, they all were in town.
That's unbelievable. Yeah.
So they came, and it was amazing getting to meet those that I hadn't met before, and to see Mike, Mark, Dee, and John again. Mm-hmm. And it's great. There's during my opening, my friends. Little girl, she's probably like 4 or 5. I had a bunch of Instax cameras, so I gave her one and I assigned her to be my photographer for the night. So I had all these amazing photos of people, like, you know, from her point of view.
Yeah.
So they have a bunch of, there's a couple where I think it was Mark O'Brien from FPP took a photograph of her photographing other people, and it's just precious. Wow. It's like amazing.
That's awesome.
But she got a kick out of it. I got a kick out of it. Everyone loved it. And she's a very outgoing little girl. So
she's
like, sure, I'll do it. And it's amazing to me. She picked it up like faster than I would have. You know, I showed her how to unload the toilet. And, you know, I showed her once and she was doing it on her own. And I was just like,
wow.
Yeah.
The future of film photography, folks.
There you go.
Well, it's very inspiring for potential things, because I'd love to have do stuff that kids can do and not involve like harmful chemicals and like scissors and things that are like dangerous.
Yeah, that's a good place where instant photography can kind of come in for you know, for children, smaller children. So and the FPP gang can't really beat those guys. Super good people too.
So nice.
I'm so
nice.
Excited to meet them in what is it, it's less than a month. I think it's that like weekend of the 29th. It's late. Sorry, no. 28th, March 1st, March 2nd is the film photography Paideia, and yeah, I'm very, very excited to meet them all.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
They're a great bunch of people. Seriously, they've been very supportive of me from the get go, and I love them for it.
Absolutely. Well, they're very supportive of the entire film community, so I think we all love them for it. So yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But okay, so do we have any more questions, Andre? Where are we at on that?
That's all of our community questions, though. I think it might be a good time to stop for a break, and then we can get on to a few more questions from you and I.
Perfect. Perfect. All right, folks. Thank you so much to the Facebook group and everybody that came through kind of last minute, like 2 hours before we hit record, to bring some really good topics up in these questions. We really appreciate it. And great questions and super awesome of you guys. So, all right, we're going to take a little break and come back with some questions to Jennifer from Andre. And Andre's got some already. I'll try to have another beer and think something up. So,
I'll have another beer and try to think of an answer.
Perfect. You're fitting right in on the show. So, all right, folks, we'll be right back and we'll see you in a second. Right, folks, we are back from the break for the last segment, and we kind of want to wrap up the show here with just some kind of questions that Andre and I kind of want to address to Jennifer about the Obscura Dark Room or whatever else we can manage to think of, particularly for me during just that last break we just took. But let's start with Andre. Andre, you want to ask a question to Jennifer first?
Yeah, one of the questions that I have is his, you know, kind of businessy, but I'm also excited about how it's had an impact on film photography recently, and I kind of just wanted to ask, why did you choose Kickstarter for starting up the Obscura Darkroom, and what are your opinions on Kickstarter's use and some would argue overuse in the burgeoning film photography industry?
Well, as far as Kickstarter, I knew I needed help and support from other people, and I knew that there was a huge film community out there that would support this, even if they weren't able to make use of the facility. So, I quite honestly, Kickstarter was sort of my default. I wasn't familiar with other ones. I knew about the risks that if you're not fully funded, you don't get anything. But I decided that just to use that. It's sort of the brand, I guess, that or the company to use for that. I went into it just like I go into most things, like, yes, this is totally going to work out 100% exactly how I want it to. Then I started, and then I started to see that other projects, they don't always get funded. So the fact that I was fully funded, it was... some terrifying moments there where, you know, it kind of plateaued and then it went up again and plateaued, and the last few days were really critical to me getting fully funded. But you know, what surprised me was there's the whole industry that has grown from trying to serve people who are running Kickstarters to get them to use their company to promote the Kickstarter. So I got like so many messages from these companies that were like, oh, we can help you with this and that. And I was just like, oh, there's like a cottage industry.
Oh yeah, I mean, if you've ever seen the Facebook and Instagram ads, you know, talking about different Kickstarter projects, and they use like really, you know, kind of clickbaity titles and things like that. There's definitely, like you said, a cottage industry around, you know, trying to get people to your Kickstarter page, and then also in terms of support for the people kickstarting things, there's I believe it's called Backer Kit that allows you to do like pre-orders and, you know, gives you a bunch of analytics beyond what Kickstarter gives you. Right. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I was most interested with where people were coming from, just so that I could, like, and not geographically, but, you know, like, did they hear about it on Facebook? Did they hear about it from FPP? Did they hear about it from, you know, wherever? Because that's when I knew how, where to focus my attention. Mm-hmm. So I used Facebook a lot to communicate and to sort of promote my Kickstarter, in sure. addition to writing an article for Emulsive, the FPP, there are some local newspapers, and Facebook, and then word of mouth. A lot of people heard from another person, and they checked it out, which I'm eternally grateful for.
Yeah, it's I'm guessing. I mean, there's. Obviously, we all know how cool the film community kind of is and how supportive it is. I mean, for the love of God, somebody gifted me a free Leica. So, I mean, I can definitely speak about that. But did you find that, like, a majority, I'm guessing a majority of your Kickstarter backers were not even somebody that was even going to probably ever set foot in your darkroom, right? Like, I'm guessing that.
I had people from like Australia and the Netherlands mm-hmm. and Canada, and then, you know, California and just far flung places. And there were some local people, but I had a lot of people, the people who were supporting from afar were getting things like the t-shirts and or prints or something like that. Mm-hmm. People who are local were, I had some rewards that were class time and membership and, you know, to get people to come in. So I still have people who need to kind of cash in their class that they purchased. But I also did, some cool things like Name an Enlarger, Name a Film Closet, and everything in there.
I would have to come up with some sort of crunchy monster name for the Enlarger. But
I had some really good ones. People came through, except there was no Enlarger Mick Enlarger face, which I was really disappointed that no one did that.
So one of my questions would be, I think maybe by the time that I kind of figured out career-wise what the kind of things I would maybe have liked to have made a living doing, I was already kind of well into my career at a factory in Ford, which, you know, I got good health benefits. I got a pension, a retirement plan. So they kind of cover a lot of stuff that it's a very safe, although soul-killing job, it's a very safe sort of like way to make a living as far as, like, you know, it's a good safety net. And I think it's kind of the way they suckered me in to stay in there for almost 20 years now. I've never really been the person. I've always been a little scared about taking risk financially as far as like starting businesses. Was there a certain point where you're just like, you know what, the hell with it. This is my time. I'm gonna give this a shot, and if it works, it was great. If it doesn't work, you know, at least I said I tried. Was there something that brought you to that part of your life?
Yeah, I worked for IKEA for about 18 and a half years.
Oh wow.
I was a visual merchandiser, which is in their in-store design department. So I had so many benefits as far as like travel, and I was able to go to different places to help build up different stores, or to remodel. Like, they sent me to Japan for 2 months. Like, oh, I cool. feel like people are like, you left that, you know, but I had time off, and I was looking at some things in my life, and if not now, when, you know. Yeah. And a friend of mine was very inspirational as far as just asking the simplest question when I was like, well, I want to work in a dark room, but there's no dark room around here. And he's like, well, why don't you open one? You know? And I'm like, wait, why don't I? And, you know, I left the security of having for myself the insurance and the this and then the, you know, all the benefits and the steady paycheck and all of that. But I think it's at the end of the day, I can tolerate some risk just in my life. I tell myself every day, like, this is what you wanted, and this is, you know, like this is what you have to do to make it work. And I'm all in, like financially, I'm all in. Like it's ridiculous how all in and I am. It's frightening, well, but it's exciting too.
Yeah, live once, right? Yeah. So
I have to. Once I get an idea, and it sticks, I have to see it through. Like I had to try it just because, and then reflecting back to when I was, you know, in high school, like looking at yearbook superlatives and stuff, it references me being a photographer. So many things in my life have referenced me being interested in film photography. Mm-hmm. So that when I say right now I own a dark room. I recently got back in touch with someone from high school, and he was like, oh, that's amazing. I remember you being so into this. And I was like, yeah, I finally feel a connection to like 18-year-old Jen.
That's not a bad thing. Anything that makes you feel awesome. Younger. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, except with five. but you know, like it's been a thread throughout my life, and I just kind of have the guts. I had the guts now to do it, and thankfully the support of my husband and my family and my friends and the community at large. So I feel very fortunate.
Wow. That's really awesome. Like, obviously, you know, I didn't know you, Jen, before I made the decision to kind of stray away from the, you know, safe, predictable, you know, business school recruitment path to go into film photography. But I can definitely relate to that thing. And it's not about, you know, the comparison to what, you know, other people kind of think of you as or label you as, but really, you know, making the rather tough decision to be like, well, I really do truly kind of connect to film photography. And, you know, this may be a difficult, kind of scary, risky choice to make, but I want to give it a try and, you know, go all in, like you said. So I definitely, you know, as you were saying that, I was just like, wow, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Plus, Andre, I think you probably heard me bitch enough about my soul killing job. You didn't want to go into that corporate environment.
No, and I've seen, you know, examples in my own family of that as well. So it's very exciting being here, but simultaneously, it's also very scary. Working in the film photography industry, working in the film photography industry right now, like on the side of like having, you know, a good view and access to information about not just kind of consumer facing stuff, but like, you know, eye of manufacturing, you know, chemistry, production, infrastructure level kind of things that support the whole thing that would kind of collapse without it. It's simultaneously like inspiring, but also terrifying how, even though we talk about the analog renaissance and, you know, the resurgence of film photography, like it's scary how easily this could all come crashing down.
Yeah.
It requires a reality check every once in a while.
absolutely.
There's still a little bit of, I mean, I think we all know there's still a little bit of fragility to this whole thing, right? I mean,
a lot of fragility.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, a couple of things could happen and some things start falling and things could go bad, pretty quickly, but like, we're not going to dwell on the negative here. Yeah, let's keep going.
Thanks,
right?
Guys. That sounds awesome. yeah. All right, now I'm just like questioning my whole existence. Oh, what did I do?
No. I think I genuinely, you know, this isn't only like me saying what I want to hear, but I genuinely do think that, you know, the whole industry is on the up and up, and that I see a lot of really exciting things happening and a lot of growth happening.
I do too. Yeah.
Don't worry, Jen. I think both for my career stability and yours, I think we're going to be okay.
Okay. I'm going to hold you to that.
Do I need to edit out the negativity? So
No.
I'll leave it in.
Negative, positives. We're nice and balanced.
There you go.
See what you did there.
All right, Andre, do you have another question for Jen?
Yeah, I have another one, and this one is definitely more positive in tone. One of the things that I'm, you know, kind of most excited about in terms of kind of simplifying down the workflow, getting more new and young people into film photography, are the kinds of things that are hitting the market right now that really just simplify the process. My mind immediately goes to the Lab Box developing tank, the Stearman Press SP445 developing tank for large format, the Intrepid camera, and now enlarger as well. Monobass from, you know, half a dozen different companies these days. You know, what kind of role do you think those new products are going to play, not only potentially at Obscura, but just in general, kind of getting more people to join the community?
I'm really excited about Monobaths. I haven't used any yet, but I think
I know somebody you can talk to about that.
Yeah.
You know a couple of people you can
talk
to about.
Yeah, I could get like 9 of them right now, but I think anything that makes it less scary, and when you're dealing with chemistry and stuff, less messy, because you know, people are doing this in their bathrooms, in their kitchens, and in public dark rooms like Obscura, but like for the home use, I think mono baths are really going to be important.
For sure.
I'm a little bit hesitant to say other kind of new technologies, because, you know, it's still the same process. I think alternative processes are very important, because it gives everyone their niche.
Yeah, I agree.
There's so many different things that you can do other than just straight up like gelatin silver printing, right? Like, you can do all these different things. Cyanotypes are amazing. Like, you don't even need an enlarger. You just need a sunny day and a window. Like,
that being said, I really wish somebody would make, you know, a rather inexpensive, like the size of like an Epson V600 UV box thingy. Oh,
I know. Yeah.
There's one at Freestyle right now that's like $800 and it's huge, and it's like, I don't want to try cyanotypes that badly.
Well, you know, it's funny, because I took a workshop on it last year on cyanotypes, and the facilitator was like, yeah, you know, you used to be able to find this stuff on eBay for cheap, but now if you find it at all, it's crazy, like the UV boxes and things like that. And besides, I think in stocking up and getting equipment for Obscura, I bought every Gralab timer and like like that was out on eBay and like all this stuff until I could find no more. I think things like that are getting a little bit harder to find.
Yeah.
Just because people are getting into it, and there are things that you can do at home that are a lot less messy and smelly and space consuming than just regular old printing.
Do you offer, like, also, because I know some people are always going to come to film and still want to post their film work on Instagram and all that. Right. It's all the rage. Do you offer scanning there too? Do you have scanners and all that stuff?
I have a scanner, but I haven't gotten it to where I can offer it as a service. But I mean, at this point, if someone wanted to bring their laptop, you know, and use a scanner, we can work that out.
Right.
You know, I also want to get into film developing too, film processing for other people. But my main focus now is getting people in and doing finding out how simple it is to do and rewarding to do it yourself.
Yeah.
So. Perfect.
All right, and I guess my next question is it's gonna be pretty positive because it's about about gear, because everybody likes to talk about gear, I guess. But Jennifer, like, what do you like to shoot with? What's your favorite kind of camera? We had a good talk about the K1000 during the break. Obviously, I always like talking about the K1000. I was mentioning that as some of the really advanced cameras I have are really nice, but man, there is something about going back to a K1000, which I shot in high school, and it sounds like Jennifer did too. Like, it's kind of like going back home, the simplicity of them. And I know they get a lot of love, but then a lot of times people are like, I also have the Pentax KX as well, which is a more advanced K1000. It has like the self timer, the mirror lockup, and the depth of field preview. But it's weird. I actually shoot the K1000 more often than I do the KX, even though the KX has more features. I don't really ever use those features. The K1000 kind of has everything that I use and need. And but what kind of cameras do you like to shoot? What's your preference?
Well, my favorite camera of all time ever is the K1000.
Yes.
Just because of all the reasons you said. The simplicity of it, it just makes sense to me as far as where things are and what how it works. Bells and whistles don't really do much for me. I much prefer sort of the creative process of taking a very bare bones piece of equipment and making it do what you want it to do. Also, leaving yourself open to happy accidents too. Some of my favorite photographs that I've done are like I was dropping the camera at the moment, like hit the shutter, and like it was an amazing shot in the streets of Manhattan, like, just sort of like, oh, I happened to look up and, you know, my Holga did this. And then, you know, like the back opened for a little, you know, it's I love shooting a Holga. Holga was my gateway drug to medium format.
Mine too.
but my Bronica SQA is probably like my main shooter. It's a tank. I've fallen on it twice. and because I'm kind of a klutz, so it's broken my fall twice, and it still keeps on, it still keeps on going. I mean, when it's sort of that reflex, like you put your arms out when you're falling, but like your arm has a camera on it. So
do you think that like toy cameras, you mentioned those, like Holga and stuff like that, do you think that would be a good way to get, like, if you got people, like if you like maybe doing a class to get new people to film, you think toy cameras could play a role in that because of their simplicity and because they're going to kind of naturally get shots that look like these Instagram filters they're so used to seeing? Like, do you think that's something you would look into doing?
Absolutely. And I think also like single use cameras too would be a good thing. Like, I'm trying to develop program for Girl Scouts or for younger kids that it'd be more contained. So like giving them a single use camera and, or people in the community, and then having them come back and then developing the film and then going through the whole process, I think would be a more economical and accessible way. But I would love if I could get like everyone a Holga.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well,
speaking like, of economical, one thing that you could do, for example, is get some of the Lomography simple use cameras, which are reloadable. Yeah. You pair that with some bulk loaded black and white film and you drive down your costs tremendously.
That's great. Thank you. Yeah. I'll look into that.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I think that's my questions. I got to talk about a K1000, so I'm perfectly happy. Andre, do you have anything else?
Nope, I answered my two, and I think we are at a great point to wrap this conversation up.
Perfect. Well, Jennifer, it has been a real pleasure to have you on here, and it's been, man, I've really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Oh, thank you for having me, and if anyone, and thank you to listeners, and if anyone is interested in finding out more information about Obscura, you can go to obscuradarkroom.com. We're on Instagram as Obscura Darkroom NJ and Twitter as O Darkroom, like the letter O. And you can always email me at jen@obscuradarkroom.com and with any information, any questions you have or words of support and encouragement are always appreciated. Anything you want to donate, that would be fantastic. But thank you for taking the time to talk with me.
Oh, absolutely. Our pleasure. Yeah. And I'm going to tell you, Jennifer, we're going to have you back on at some point and get a progress update as the business goes forward. And also, you know, feel free to, you know, send in a call-in update to us and we'll put it on. So, yeah, just I'd like to throw that out there. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah. Just keep us updated. I'd like to keep tabs on how you're doing and how everything's progressing there. So, yeah, and we will definitely have you back on in the future to see exactly where this road is taking you. So, yeah, it's been a real blast. Perfect. All right, Andre, where can people see your work?
People can see my photography, both film-related and watch-related, and maybe the two connected together in the not-too-distant future, at Andre on Film on Instagram.
All right. You can see my photography on Instagram at Gutterman Photo, on Facebook at Mike Gutterman Photography. You can join the Facebook group for this podcast. It's the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group. You can email this program at negpositives@gmail.com. And also follow the program on Instagram under the account Negative Positives, mostly ran by Mr. Bryce Randall. If you submit photos to Instagram, please put the hashtag Negative Positives in your hashtags, and maybe Bryce will find it and highlight it on the Negative Positives Instagram account. So, all right, folks, thanks so much for listening. It's been very enjoyable. Thanks to Jennifer for joining us, and I think we're going to go ahead and wrap this one up. So we shall see you very soon. Andre, I think you have the solo show this week. Is that right?
I do indeed.
Okay. So you guys will hear from Andre for the midweek episode. But until then, everyone, have a great week. Everybody stay positive.
And shoot some cool film photos.
There you go. All right, folks. Take care. We will see you soon. Goodbye. Gutterman Cave Production!